Session number 5868, Hortin Monday, part 32.
All being well. Well, now, I think I'd better off wander off now and tell you another tale about them Romanians. I told you I didn't like them, and I'll tell you how it all happened. We were... When we had a parcels, I told you about that kitchen range upstairs. Well, then when the winter come, I allowed the other prisoners to go up and do their bit of cooking on it. Well, because their cooking meant that I'd scrounge some spuds and that round the village. And they boiled the spuds up. That was their food. Well, in my case, I used to have rice in my parcel. In fact, I told them then to send rice instead of Quaker oats. Well, what I used to do with this rice, I used to soak it and then boil it. And what I used to do instead of in Britain where we have sugar and tackle in, I used to have dripping. I told them to alter my parcel to have dripping instead of butter. And I used to put this dripping in when it were done, all that went. That didn't half keep the cold out, a good old basin of rice and dripping. Well, now, what happened this night? Oh, hell. I come back. We all used to rush back where we were working. We'd been working in that forest that day. Rush back. I went upstairs and got some water, I'd got a saucepan. Well, you see, I'd scrounged and got a fair amount of money, then you could buy things, I could buy it. Bought a new saucepan. Put me, what's it, rice in, mixed it all up with water and that, put it on a boil, come down, had a swill. When I went back upstairs, there was two of these Romanians. I told you I didn't like them. Them two stood there, and my pot, my saucepan, was shoved out on the right at the end of the way. So I thought, blimey. So I fetched my saucepan. They stood there. I lifted theirs off and put mine on. They started shouting, grabbed theirs and took it off and put mine on. It put mine out the way. I thought, hello. Well, that done it. I got theirs. I knocked it off the stove on the floor. I put mine on the stove in the place of theirs. I got hold of, now don't think I'm swanking. I got hold of one of them in front of his throat on his tunic. I got out the other just the same, and I held them at arm's length. And I shook them. I shook hell out of them. They squealed. I hollered, shouted, posting, posting, posting. And old Jerry, the posting, come running up. What's, oh, before he got there, I slung one way and one the other. Old posting come up, what's the matter? I told him what had happened. And he said, all right, he kicked him out, told him to get back down in the cellar out the way. Now, there's a difference. Now, if that same thing had happened a few months ago, before we got our parcels, old Poston had belted me, but no, he kicked them out. And that just shows the difference. Well, that, because just at that time, well, then I was getting my strength back and I were all right. But I'm not swanking, but that's what actually happened with them. I believe I told you that there was one Serbian there. That's from the Baltic. The Balkans, wouldn't it be Serbia? Any road, there was a Serbian there, and he was on his own, he was the only one. But by gum, he was a nice chap. And we sort of took to him. Any road, I took to him and looked after him. And me having plenty of food, I used to give him my bread, and very often, you know, the sauerkraut dinner, when I was all right for me parcels. But if I'd run short, I didn't. But if I'd was all right, I used to let him have my bread and sometimes me bowl of sauerkraut. And he looked after us very well. He'd do anything for us, and we used to, us chaps, that was before we went upstairs, we used to get him to keep his eye on our stuff for us, so that if anybody were pinching anything. But he'd done us a good turn, looked after us well. Now I'm going to tell you a tale now about these Russians. We was now well fed, well clothed, put on weight again, fit and well, and well respected in the village. The civil population, they used to look on us with envy because they'd got practically nothing. The food, our food was meat and so on, which I told you in the other side of this tape, in the parcels that we had. Well, now with the civilians, all they had, their main food, was black bread, potatoes, plenty of potatoes, that was their main food, and meal, they used to have some sort of meal, but what it was I don't know. But when I've been in the houses later on, I saw it, and I used to say then, well, when they finished messing about with the meal they had, it used to look like a beef steak. But in reality, there was one butcher's shop in that village, and each week he'd perhaps kill a pig and a sheep, and that would have to be rationed out in very small proportions through the whole of the village. Now the clothes they got, it was almost impossible for the civilians to buy clothing, and shoes, they was out of all reason, because in the week, the civvies in the week, it was very noticeable that they used to wear wooden clogs in the week. On Sunday, when they used to dress up on Sunday clothes, as you call it, well, then they would put on a pair of ordinary shoes or boots. And even the prisoners of war, I should have mentioned that before, the prisoners was issued with wooden clogs, so we had our wooden clogs, not shoes, only the ones we hung on to, of course. Well, now, I think I'll start and tell you some of the tales that might be amusing. Well, as I said, we was fitting well and got that room upstairs, a long room which we use, of course, for bedroom. And then, in the front, there was another very large room, which old Jerry allowed us to use. We began to get quite a lot of privileges. He allowed us to use that large room. Well, now, we was talking one day amongst ourselves what to do and so forth, and one of them said, I wish we could have a game of billiards. Well, that built from that, why don't we make a billiard table? All right, yes, well, we fixed it up, and we got this large room, so we got some chalk, and we marked out a billiard table on the floor. Full-size billiard table on the floor, marked it all out, very careful, chalked all around. We marked the pockets out, corner pockets, middle pockets, marked those out. Mark the D out, put the two spots in, proper billiard table, all complete. Now then, we wanted some balls and cues. Well now, as I told you, I was probably with the old cook, little old fat cook. I went down into the kitchen, into his cookhouse down the bottom of the yard and had a word with him. And he said, sort out what you like in the spuds, bag of spuds there. Well, a big box. Well, I sorted these out and I found half a dozen or so lovely round taters, just about the size of billiard balls. The best I could find, anyway. Well, I got these spuds. I took them upstairs to our chaps. And we had a go. Different time, we cleaned them up. We got two white balls, we cleaned the two of the spuds, we got them almost perfect round. Where it was a little lump, we just peeled it off a little and then scraped the skin off the other round and got some sandpaper, and we made those taters almost as perfect as a billiard ball. Now here was the snag, what about the red? Colour for the red. Well, we found the best we could of a red one with a skin on. We left the skin on that, but where there was just a patch here and there that didn't look perfect, we sandpapered that down. Well, now we'd got a full set of billiard balls. Next thing was the cue. I saw the old cook and he scrounged round for me and he got me a broom handle. So that was all right. I took that up, we'd got a cue and the billiard balls. Well, do you know the fun we had out of that? Oh, it was tremendous. We used to play, and then as we got used to playing, kneeling down on the floor and poking this. Now, you couldn't get a cannon off a cush because the ball went out. Well, so we had to make a set of rules, and that was the next object, a set of rules. And because the ball went out of play every so often, but if you had to play, we learnt, so we had to play ever so steady. So get them together, you could get a cannon and so on, or an in-off red or whatever it might be, in the different pockets. We had to make the rules, and then if it run out of play, we decided that wherever it went out, you got the ball off and put it dead in the centre, imaginary line across the billiard table, put the ball in the centre, and that's where you had to spot it again. But then it come on, we decided, we fixed the rules, and each game that was played we had to have a referee, a judge or whatever you might call it. And we kept playing for a time, then we started playing for coppers. We had a flyer, you know, the old-fashioned billiard flyer, 25 up or whatever it might be. Well, we had flyers, and do you know that was ever so amusing? These flyers that we used to have for a few coppers, and because it built from that, then it come to challenging. Now, this is where the fun started, really. In fact, it busted the show up at the finish. There was a little Scotchman there, Rogers his name was. Oh, he was a little firebrand. He was only a young kid, he must have joined up well under age. He was only a bit of a kid, but oh, hell. The trouble we had with him, all the way along, and now, you'd only got to say something wrong to him or upset him, and he used to go for you like a little terrier. Well, he was no size, no nothing. But when he went off the deep end, he'd go for you. Well, because we got used to him and we used to have a laugh. As soon as he went off the deep end and started to scrap or anything, we all used to grab hold of him and hold him tight till he cooled down, and then he'd laugh. He'd say, oh, I didn't mean nothing, I didn't mean it. And that's the sort of kid he was. Well, now here's a bit of fun. I told you we started playing for money. Well, then they started challenging. Little Rogers, he was a blooming, he was the best billiard player we got there. And he challenged somebody. I don't know which one it was. Now, but anyway, he challenged him so much aside. That was all settled. We all there watched it. And they got to have a judge, so they couldn't pick a better judge than Yorkie. As Yorkie, I've told you about him, he was the starter, and a kid named Smith, he come from West Hartlepool. Well, Yorkie, I said, all right, Yorkie, you be the judge. You be the judge. All right, Yorkie said. Well, they played on, and little Rogers began to get beat. Well, because, you know, there's a hell of a lot of rules where your ball runs out of play. So Yorkie done his best as referee and put it back. But no, it wouldn't do. At the finish, This kid, young Roger, said, I said to York, he said, you're twisting, you're on his side, you ain't helping us a bit. He said, you're a twister. That started a row, so York, he says, oh. He said, all right, he said, all right. He says, will you agree for me to give the proper verdict? Roger says, yes, yes, yes. He says, all right. He said, you give your verdict. He says, I'll stand by it. So, oh, York, he says, all right, well, here he goes. And the red ball was in the middle of the table. York, he walked straight up and jumped on the red, smashed it to smithereens. He says, the game's finished. He said, now you can share the winnings. Oh, blimey. Well, talk about laugh. We had a real laugh over that. Well, now, on Sundays, very often on a Sunday, because we was all locked in the lager, everyone was locked in. Well, on a Sunday, we started, they got a pack of cards and started, you know, gambling. You know, halfpennies and pennies and so forth, gambling. Well, because the chaps had begun to get, we was earning a bit of money, all at work, as I say, and just that tuppence a day stunt. But tuppence a day was nothing. It was the fiddling where the money came from, you know, flogging stuff. And little odds and ends you'd flog, where you'd get a month's wages for nothing, as the saying is, out of your packet, or a couple of months. And we used to play cards on a Sunday. Well, now, when anyone run out, they'd say to me, kid, go on, what we give us something for this, and then go and flog it. Well, it wouldn't matter what it was, any little thing out of a parcel that wasn't all that important. Even Oxo Cube. But anyway, I was just saying, I could flog anything. Well, I was the sort of what you might call the middleman for them. Well, I used to give them a few shillings, as the saying is, whatever it was, so as they could keep on gambling. Well, now, I used to take that out and flog it for them. Well, as time went on, like from that, and following that, very often, of a Sunday evening, now the front of that big room that we used to go into was almost level with the street, and we used to get in there of a Sunday night, bunch of us. Now, old Rodney, the Cockney kid, he were a blooming good singer. And of course, in them days when you were all young and we were getting fit and strong and happy, as the saying is, under the circumstances, we had a sing-song. And we used to open the window and sing at night of a Sunday. And do you know, the villagers used to come up in the street and stand outside. And we used to sing hymns, very often hymns, you know. And because Christian hymns are the same in any country, don't matter where you go. And we'd rattle these hymns off, and the civvies outside used to join in, because their language was different, but the tunes was the same, and they used to love it. And of course we used to have a lot of English songs, you know, Tipperary and the old songs. So that used to pass a Sunday evening away. Well, now I'm telling you tales like this, which sounds as though it was a perfect holiday, but by God, I told you the different tale prior to this. I can assure you these was the beautiful sides. That was when we came from nothing to something. Now that's why I'm telling you this, and we did enjoy it, and it was a beautiful relief. Well, now, one day, I was going down the street, and I told you about the Burgomaster, Lord Mayor, and how I let him have some cocoa. Well, I was going down the street one day, and he called me across, took me in, and wanted some more cocoa, and I fixed it for him, because a good price, 10 marks for a tin. And I told him then, I said, well, I said, I'm doing you a lot of good turns. Do you think you can do me one? He says, yes, what is it? I said, that little postern there, I says, he's knocking air chaps about. He has knocked air chaps about terrible. I said, and he's still doing it with the others, the Russians and them people. I said, do you think you can stop him? I said, because the Geneva Convention tells you pretty plain you've got to be treated respectable. He says, I'll stop it. And do you know he did stop it? And that old Jerry never touched none of them Russians nor nobody else after that at all. And the strange thing was, later on, the strange thing was, that postman gave me a written pass to allow me to travel anywhere or go anywhere in that village as free as I like, because that was during daytime, naturally. And I had that pass, and I asked young Ashley, I said, see if you can find it. Well, he did. He found it in an old tin. Christmas coming up. Well, now, yes, Christmas was coming up. Now, if you remember on the other side of the tape, I told you about that old couple in the village that gave me a bit of bread and a bowl of coffee, where I gave him some coal and that to help him along anyway. Well, he asked me when I come by that way one day, he said, would I like to go on our Christmas dinner with him? That was 1917. So I said, all right, I would. Well, I went and I took some stuff with me. Stuff that they couldn't buy or couldn't get in any case. And such as some cocoa and a tin of bully beef and that. Well, meat was out of all reason for them. I took them some grub, you know, and evidently they'd scrounged an old fowl from somewhere. But we had a nice Christmas dinner. I enjoyed it, and it helped them out a lot. Well, now we got into conversation then, and he was telling me what happened in the village when the Cossacks broke in. That was a Russian, their cavalry. Well, they was Cossacks, and they were always known as marvellous horsemen. Well, it was them that broke into that village that caused the trouble, and I think they were very, very savage people too. Well, according to what he told me, they was. And he described some of the things they did. Now, this is one of the things he told me, and he said he saw it happen from his house. They got out of one of the Germans. I don't know whether one of the Germans had upset one of them or whatever it was. But they got out of this German. They got some ropes. They tied a rope round one arm, rope round the other arm, round one leg and the other leg, and they put each rope onto a horse. And when they was all tied up, they whipped the horses and they pulled this man to smithereens. And he told me, he said, I saw him do that. Now, he told me another tale then. He said they ravaged the place, burnt and ravaged it, as I told you previous time. He said, and they went to the village pub that still stood. They didn't destroy that. They went to the village pub and they sat there drinking and drinking all he'd got. They kept sending him down his cellar and fetching up what he'd got, and he fetched everything up he could find. And he told him, he said, there's no more. He said, it's all gone. That is the lot. He said, and all they done then, they shot him. Shot him and finished the drink and left him lying on the floor. Well, no, he wouldn't have told me tales like that if it wasn't right. Now, that old couple, they was ever such a nice old couple. They'd had the son killed in the war. That was by us, I expect. I don't know. But anyway, he wasn't, you know, bitter against us or anything. He was ever such a nice old couple, I was. Now I'm going to tell you just a few tales. on the other tape, I told you about the Burgomaster, or Lord Mayor, how I used to flog a tin of cocoa or something like that to him from our chaps. Well, he told me, of course, in the beginning, that he badly needed it for his widowed mother. So, of course, that didn't make any difference to us. But later on, one of his clerks told me, when I was talking to him, he'd got no widowed mother, no more than I got a widowed granddad. What he was doing with it, he was sending it to an I-class hotel in Berlin. Now, what the hell he got for that, I don't know, because he gave us 10 marks for a tin. Well, of course, that was only a few coppers in England then. But anyway, that's what he was doing with it. Well, now I'll wander on. We came now into the spring of 1918. Now, at that time, if you look back through your history books, you'll see that there was a revolution in Russia in October 1917. Well, nearly all of us prisoners there, and there was Russians, of course, mainly, all that area was Russian prisoners of war. Now, all that lot and all that time, none of us ever heard of that revolution. The only answer is, of course, they killed the Tsar, the Queen, princes, princesses, they murdered the whole lot. Now, it's funny that the Germans never told us. The only answer I can think of was it was suppressed, because the Kaiser then was king, of course, of Germany, and eventually, towards the end of the war, there was, of course, a revolution in Germany, and the Kaiser, he abdicated and went to Holland, and eventually he died in Holland. Well, now, I'll wander on now to talk about the Russians. Just at that time, I'd got any amount of freedom. I could wander almost anywhere I liked in the village, as I told you. He gave me a written pass to do so. Well, it got into my head then, I'm going to make a break. Well, I had it over with our chaps, us Englishmen. We had it together and had it over with them, and I told them what I thought I was going to have a do. And I thought, well, the best thing I can do, of course, you had to break into Russia. No other way. You couldn't go across Germany. Those that did break out from the other side of Germany, they broke out and went the other way. They could get away with it there, but you couldn't. I'd got to go into Russia from this side. But anyway, I had a word with this Russian that I knew so well, so friendly with, and I thought, well, he is sure to have a do. And he was interpreter for the other Russians. And I had a word with him one day, and I asked him, I said, are you game to make a bolt for it into your country? I thought surely he'd say yes, but he said no. I said, oh, I thought, that's not too good. I said, well, why not? He said, well, he said, in my case, he said, if I break out from here,